Turn of the Tide by Elizabeth McNeil and read by Angela Ness for Saga Egmont. Introduction. Turn of the Tide tells what happened to some of the women and children whose lives were devastated on Black Friday, 14th of October 1881. The previous book, The Storm, tells the true story of how, on that day, half of the fishing fleet of the Scottish borders town of Eyemouth was sunk in a freak storm, and 121 of the town's men drowned. Many of them died within sight of their homes, frantically clinging to the Hurker rocks that jut up from the water just outside the harbour mouth, and their deaths were witnessed by wailing women on the quay. No family in the small town was unaffected by the tragedy, which left behind 80 widows and 260 orphan children, as well as several fatherless unborn children. People who had been prosperous and contented became grieving paupers overnight. Contemporary newspaper reports of the dreadful storm aroused a wave of sympathy from people all over the country, and money poured in to help the afflicted families. Within 2 weeks, the vast sum of £50,000 was contributed by rich and poor alike, including contributions from Queen Victoria, who sent £100, and a railway signalman who sent half a crown. This generous response proved to be a problem, however, for the town authorities could not agree on how and to whom to distribute so much money. The equivalent of more than £1 million today. In the end, an inspector of the poor, called Stephen Anderson, was brought from Edinburgh to supervise the handing out of the charity money on behalf of a committee of local worthies. Anderson was a poor choice because he was a weak-willed, avaricious man who could not resist peculating on his own behalf from such a princely sum. Though the money was enough to set the town back on its feet by buying new fishing boats to replace the 21 that had been lost, the official committee, consisting mainly of bigoted churchmen, decided instead to give miserly weekly handouts to deserving women and children. Children were to receive half a crown a week till the age of 14, and widows 5 shillings each, providing they led moral lives. Yet these families had enjoyed at least £7 a week when their men were working. And they also had their own codes of conduct and morals, of which churchmen disapproved. For example, few women married before they became pregnant. Many marriages were irregular, and wives never took their husbands' surnames. Among the recipients of this thin, gruel charity were 3 loosely related women, Effie, Rosabel, and Jessie, who clung desperately together, forming a new family unit for themselves. Effie, the oldest, lost her husband and 3 sons. Her beautiful daughter-in-law, Rosabel, lost her husband of 1 week. And pert Jessie was about to be married to Effie's 2nd son, Henry, who also died. Both Rosabel and Jessie were pregnant. The storm tells how they, like the other women of the tragic town, tried to adjust to their changed circumstances and make new lives for themselves. They all went through the stages of grief, sorrow, followed by anger, and finally, by a kind of resignation. Effie found solace in caring for her sons' women and their posthumous children, especially Rosabel's son Aaron, whose mother could not clear her mind of the conviction that his father had been a sort of sacrifice for his birth. She found it hard to love him, and would have exchanged him for his dead father if she had been given the choice. Jessie, the 3rd of the trio, was the first to recover her spirits and will to survive. Shortly after Rosabel had Aaron, Jessie gave birth to a girl called Henrietta. And though Effie originally had doubts,